out of the burning stake chuckling at the fire. The woman was completely mad. The darkness wrapped me up. It devoured me. It tried to chew me up, but found me unpalatable. It spit me out. I staggered like a drunk. A voice in my head said, "There you are, darling. I missed you. You've been away too long." Moonlight glinted off the corpse-strewn black water lapping at Dejagore's wall. I imagined something stirring in those waters, something that wanted to grab me and pull me deep into the inky darkness, down amongst the naked bones. I looked to my left, and there stood the long-dead speaker of the Nwengbao, Kidam. His wife Hong Tre was with him. They smiled. The old woman made a finger sign I knew to be a blessing. Darkness swallowed me. Darkness had no stomach for me. It puked me up. I was in a tree. My eyes saw strangely. I had to turn my head this way and that to see out of one or the other. Men of half a dozen races were slaughtering men of several others below me. The trees were repelled. They loved death but hated the shedding of blood. I was in the Grove of Doom, in a tree. I raised a hand to feel my eyes. White feathers blocked my vision. I lost consciousness. I went 100 places. 100 places came to me. I seemed to visit all times and all places of the past several years. I was on the Plain of Bones. Darkness had come. A black wind blew the bones about. I tumbled like a leaf. Crows mocked me from the naked trees. I rolled over into a deeper night, and in an instant was strolling up the sloped floor of the tunnel where the old men rested in their cocoons of spun ice. A great deep booming thundered in my head. It was pain incarnate, yet seemed to carry a message. I tried to listen. Time expanded to encompass the throbbing within me, which became a slow, deep voice that speeded up until it turned into Tai Dei, nagging worriedly in Nwengbao. "Standard bearer, speak to me!" I tried, but my jaws wouldn't work. I could do nothing but make inarticulate noises. "He's all right." That was Uncle Doge. I opened my eyes. Doge knelt beside me, fingers against the side of my neck. "What happened, Bone Warrior?" I sat up. My muscles were watery. I was drained, but it seemed no time had passed. I volleyed the question back. "What happened over there?" Crows still swarmed in the distance, though not in clouds like I'd seen. "Where?" Tai Dei asked.
"There, where the birds are,"
Tai Dei said.
"I do not know. I saw nothing unusual.
No cloud of darkness, no lightning?" After a pause,
"None that I saw."
Uncle Doge considered the distance thoughtfully.
"I need something to eat."
Though I hadn't been ghost walking, I was that week. The event was troubling. Chapter 85. The summons came from Croker. I went across. Only a few days had passed, but already the world had begun to seem peaceful again. The soldiers looked less haggard. Shadows weren't a problem now. For us.
"I'm here," I told the old man.
The guard outside had sent me right in.
"Where's your mother-in-law?"
"Good question. The other day she said she was going after firewood. We haven't seen her since."
"One eye's gone, too."
I gaped. Then I started to snicker. The snicker turned into a guffaw. Before long, I was bent double, unable to regain control.
"They eloped? Don't tell me they eloped!"
"I wouldn't think of it."
"Knock off the braying!
You sound like a jackass giving birth." A stone impossibility. He indicated the alcove where his special people were stored.
"You smoke. Find them."
I headed that way, still shivering with restless giggles.
"How come I have to do it? You and Lady were already here."
"We're busy restructuring the force. We don't have time."
"She over being hooked on ghost walking?"
"She's gonna have to be."
"Get busy. I don't have time to jack my jaw either."
He pointed. He wasn't in a playful mood. Must have been getting less sleep than usual. Smoke was alone behind the curtain.
"What happened? You bury the other two?"
"Stashed them in what's left of your dugout. We needed the room. Get to work. I pulled the curtain. He was the boss. He didn't have to be a nice guy all the time. Smoke didn't look the same. Lady had done something to keep him under. He seemed more drugged than comatose. He smelled, too, bad. Somebody had been letting their chore slide. You're the physician. You ought to know about keeping clean. This guy's a mess. I'll get you a bucket. I didn't wait for him to tell me. I went to work. Croker had made appropriate preparations. There was drinking water and fresh bread. I ate some of the latter immediately. The command type sure lived the good life. I hadn't had anything but bad bitterroot for the past several days, and not nearly enough of that. A point I ought to make to Rudy. Send out for sausages, I muttered. Maybe when we finally found Katovar, it would be like the Vedna paradise. Hot and hotter running houris driven by an overwhelming passion for smelly old guys with no social skills. Houris who spent the rest of their time whipping up lots of freshly cooked food. Good food. Quit stalling around, Croker growled a while later. That little prick is clean enough. I wasn't anxious to go out. Somebody ought to watch what he eats. Smoke looked like he was suffering the early stages of dietary disease. Croker just gave me a dark look. He didn't much care, apparently. You have a problem doing your job. Cranky, cranky. I had a problem with going out. It had been scary getting battered around between Catcher and Kina and the Place of the Bones the other day. I had tapped a reservoir of fear I didn't know I contained. I especially didn't like being a bird. That part, I hadn't understood at all. Catcher now knew I could walk the ghost world without her manipulations. Maybe I could because she had opened the way. Now I feared she could hunt me down and snap me up out there whenever the mood took her. I was not inclined to suffer her torments voluntarily. Mergen! I chomped down a last mouthful of bread, followed it with a slug of water. Bloated, I did what I had to do. Goblin must have had a notion that he was being watched from afar, or suspected that he could be. I wouldn't have found him had I had no idea how his mind worked, the clever little shit. The spells he used to camouflage himself and his men were of the simplest sort, almost undetectable. All they did was make the eye wander away from what was probably just a modest boulder lurking in the bushes, gently so as to go unremarked, even when you were expecting something. He and his rangers were scattered so no concentration stood out. Mogaba didn't appear to be a concern. I might be wrong, but I assumed One Eye's first move, if he deserted, would be to find Goblin. They had been best friends before anyone else in the company was born, if you didn't count Lady. A quick determined search revealed that One Eye had not joined Goblin yet. A cruise up and down the road from Kialune did not turn him up either. He must be in hiding for the day. I didn't feel Kina or Soulcatcher. More confident, I found Goblin again, rode Smoke backward in time. Goblin did a good job ambushing the Prabhrindra Draz gang, and no spells concealed the encounter. He'd been too busy with other work. It was a traditional Black Company-style ambush. The prince hurried into it at dusk. He was accompanied by several hundred soldiers. They outnumbered Goblin's force heavily. A few arrows wobbled in from the brush south of the road, striking several Taglians. Ululations went up, brush rustled, more arrows flew. The Prabhrindra Dra had no idea who was attacking. Shadowlander partisans probably seemed more likely than the company. He didn't know about Goblin. We'd taught the Taglians to respond to an ambush by counterattacking immediately. That's what the prince's companions did, though not quite instantly. Better than half charged into the brush chasing rustlings. A handful of those rustles were created by Goblin's men, but most were contributed by little owls, groggily trying to get away from they knew not what, without ever rising out of the cover. Goblin's second attack from the opposite hillside was far more vigorous and included illusory people the Taglians would know could not possibly be there if they just thought. I saw my own doppelganger wading through the brush, waving a nicked-up rusty sword. A couple of goblins' men and a gang of ghosts retreated toward Kialune, drawing most of the remainder of the prince's band with them. Then the remainder of goblins' force jumped in after the prince. It was a brisk fight. When the dust settled, our erstwhile employer was a prisoner, alive but in no shape to trouble anyone. He had collected a dozen wounds. Goblin faded away. Rangers and illusions harassed and baffled the Taglians till dawn made goblins' illusions too obviously illusory. The Taglians made a valiant effort to find their prince. They had no luck. Soon after the next sunset, a brush with a killer shadow panicked them. They fled north with the news that the prince might be dead. I could imagine the effect that would have when it reached Taglios. The capital would fall into chaos if the priesthoods rejected the Radisha's right to rule. It could mean civil war. The woman had non-canonical supporters, and there was no alternate heir apparent. The question of the succession had been around for years, but always got pushed aside by more immediate crises. She would start paying the price of her perfidy before we ever glanced her way. One Eye and Gota must still be on the road. Instead of trying to find them there, it seemed easier to go all the way back and pick them up as they began their adventure. That worked, after a fashion. When Gota caught One Eye alone, they held only a brief discussion before the little wizard grunted, dug a pack out of his ruined bunker, and joined her in slipping off into the nearest woods. Obviously, the matter had been discussed before. Preparations had been made. They didn't talk much, which was hard to credit. One Eye wasn't known for his reticence, and Mother Gota was worse. He only grunted occasionally. When she said anything at all, it was just to complain about the general unfairness of life. Total silence descended once they entered the shade of the trees. Light and shadow fluttered about as the wind stirred the branches and leaves. They became increasingly hard to track. Oh, but the little shit was a wizard, wasn't he? And one who damned well knew about smoke. He made me work at it, but I stayed with him till my world began to shake. Earthquake? Again? It dawned on me at last. Somebody outside the ghost world wanted me. Reluctantly, I returned to flesh. About damned time! The old man snapped when I opened my eyes. I really thought we lost you this time. Huh? That came out a dry-throated croak. I tried for a cup but found I had no strength to extend my arm. I was wasted bad. The captain had to pour water into my mouth for me. I really fucked up. How long was I out there? 11 hours. That was how tough One Eye had made it to track him. I bet there's no finding him at all once it gets dark, I said, after I'd gotten a little sugar water inside me. I was confused about when I was. I meant after dark the day he fled. He could lose himself thoroughly in the dark. And darkness always comes. Croaker wasted a lot of energy cursing. I said, I can watch for crows. Wherever there's crows, there's something there watching. Except around Goblin, who had his owls and confusion spells. Unless they never looked, because Catcher didn't know he was out there. Mostly they're too dim to be fooled by low-grade glamours. Which had to say something about people and crows, both, but I'm not bright enough to define it. I'll just count them gone. For now. I don't want you going out there if you're going to lose track so bad that you forget you've got to come back. It was my own habit of dreaming that endangered me. I had encountered fewer perils roaming around that way. Again, Croaker said, I'll just count him gone. He smiled grimly. He'll be back right after he strangles that woman. Which will happen about as soon as the new wears off. You go back over there. Keep a close eye on the standard. And send me whatever writings you've got ready for review. Ulp, I wasn't ready for this. He hadn't shown much interest ever before. When are we going to move on? Or are we not going to? Not till we have our crops in. Unless we're under really heavy pressure. 5 months minimum. Enjoy the rest. Enjoy the rest. Like I enjoyed all that loafing around when we were bottled up inside Dejigore. He missed all that because he couldn't turn down the chance to go off and play games with Soul Catcher. When you went after Catcher the other day, was there a plan? Did you really expect to accomplish anything? I retained doubts about the depth of their antagonism even now. Check with my dearly beloved. That was her scheme. You'll probably see it again. She's got the notion that if she keeps harassing Soul Catcher, Catcher won't be able to concentrate on giving us grief. Now there's an idea. Jap sticks into a nest of vipers so they don't have time to come hunt you down. Why not whack on hornets' nests and hibernating bears while we're at it? Find One Eye or go work on the annals. I've got all the bitching I can handle right here at home. You ought to get some sleep, I said, heading out. You're way too crabby. There is color. There is life of a sort. There is light. Without light, there can be no darkness. There is death. The husks of 100 crows surround the listing throne. Death will find a way. Darkness will find a way inside. Darkness always comes. The thing on the throne sits wide-eyed, blind. Its orbs show no pupils. They are half-fried egg-white blanks, yet the creature does seem to see. Certainly it is aware. Grimacing in agony, its face turns as it tracks each venturesome spy from the world. It concentrates its will on each newcomer, wanting it to land. A twinge of evil humor stirs its features whenever a weak bird fails to carry out its instructions. The earth quivers. The throne slides a foot, tilts another inch. Alarm underscores the refreshed pain on the face of the sleeper. The crack in the earth opens wider. The color wafting up brightens. A breeze whispers out of the bowels of the earth. It's colder than the heart of a starving spider. It carries a black vapor. The throne jerks another inch. Death will find a way. Even the gods must pass.
Chapter 86. Things went too well for too long. Summer was an idol. It never got too hot. The rains were perfect for the crops we planted. We were threatened with the sort of harvest for which peasants pray. We made sure the peasants we encountered understood that the wonderful weather was all our fault. Our foragers had liberated draft animals enough to support us if we traveled light, leaving the heavy equipment that had followed us down from friendly territory. There were even a few sheep for those not bound by Goonie strictures against eating flesh. The old saw is true. An army does travel on its stomach. What we accomplished by projecting the Taglian will the distance we did was a tribute to Croker's planning, preparation, and devotion. And psychosis. And of course it was founded on the 4 years given us by Long Shadow's utter failure to interfere. Poor boy. Should have listened to Mogaba. He wouldn't be living in a kennel. Not that he could be faulted for having been deceived by the mother of deceivers when Kina could spin webs of deception to warp the eyesight of gods as great as she. We hadn't yet fattened up from the winter, but we were getting set to take the next leap already. Neither Soul Catcher nor Mogaba, neither lost Taglian loyalists nor the local population seemed further inclined to make our lives miserable. We were getting along with the latter fairly well now. After, apparently at Lady's insistence, finally sending recon forces to winkle out the secrets of Overlook, the old man had discovered that the fortress contained several treasures. Half became the company treasury, something we haven't had for a generation. All pledged brothers received equal shares of the rest. Eventually, Croker ordered a market established where locals could bring anything they cared to sell. Results were disappointing at first, but once we demonstrated that we wouldn't rob or murder anybody, trade picked up. Peasants are resilient. They're realists. These didn't see how our yoke could weigh heavier than Long Shadow's. They had no problems with old or imagined myths of the Black Company, despite existing so much closer to Katavar. They didn't know the name Katavar as such either. Nor were they concerned about Kina, under any of her names. Their Kina was a creator as well as a destroyer, fierce but no unhallowed queen of darkness. The Year of the Skulls was no terror to them. They can imagine no future more grim than their past. Nobody hailed us as liberators, however. We were but the shadow that displaced the darkness. I wandered the market occasionally, accompanied by Tai De and an interpreter. Tai De objected. He was sure my curiosity would get me killed. He wasn't shy about advising me that curiosity was a lethal curse. Uncle Doge usually tagged along. Despite pretenses to the contrary, a lot of strain had developed between us. I couldn't forgive Sari's absence, though I controlled my urge to bring my knowledge into the open. What I did to irritate him was ask every southerner I interviewed about the constellation called the Noose. But nobody knew it. Except for the devastation that was Kialune, it would have seemed a good world. I enjoyed myself, except for missing Sari, and I saw her in my dreams. There were fewer demands on me lately, though I was in charge at the Shadowgate. Red, Rudy, and Bucket did most of the real work there, showing me the ropes as they went. Nobody said so, but I was getting educated in case I ever had to take over. I did not remind anybody that I managed the old crew tolerably during our ordeal in Dejigori. I didn't remind them that we had a lieutenant and she was a whole lot more experienced and hard-edged than me. Anytime you say anything, you just get more work piled on. Chapter 87. I looked down slope one morning and saw a young army headed my way. 25 men and as many jackasses, loaded down with packs and bamboo. I told Tai De, "I don't like the looks of this. That's Loftus, Longinus, and Cletus all at the same time. Not to mention Otto and Hagop, whom I hadn't seen for a while. When them three all clot up together, you can bet something is up." Tai De looked at me like he wondered if I really thought he was dim enough to think they were off for a picnic. He remembered the brothers from Dejigori, and probably understood their obsessions better than I did. Something was in the wind, though. I went down to meet them.
"Hey!" Cleet hollered, waving. "It's the Hermit Prince. What are you guys up to?"
"We heard you set up your own kingdom over here. We come to see its wonders."
"Looks like you're here to invade me. What is all this shit?" I couched the question in the language of the Jewel Cities.
"Field trials for a new toy. We've been playing with it in the cellars of the castle."
"Huh. Could there be a real reason that the old man still kept most of Overlook off limits? I hope it's good to eat." Longo snickered.
"This would be too tasty, Mergen. But it'll be fun to dish out."
Tai De scowled. Left out again. Too bad. He was with the company, but not of the company. As I lived with Nguyen Bao, without being Nguyen Bao. The way you guys are grinning, I got to figure, whatever it is, it's got a lot of gears and levers and does something entirely decorative with a reliability quotient of 10%.
"Oh, ye of weak faith. Cleet, you ever seen a sour ball as negative as this guy?"
"He just don't understand engineering."
"I understand engineering fine. I don't understand engineers. What are we doing?"
"Failed tests," Cleet reminded me. "We applied a little engineering to Lady's fireball flingers."
"Range, accuracy, power, Mergen." Loftus enthused. "Velocity. All areas where we thought there was room for improvement." "Absolutely. The fireball throwers would do a man a lot of damage, but you practically had to stick him with your pole to make sure you hit him." All this foreign yammer brought Uncle Doge around to poke his nose in. Which did him no good. But he would figure it out quickly enough. Longo said,
"You got a nice field of fire here, Mergen."
He waved toward the mountains. Miles of nothing lay between us and the evergreen forest. His arm swung around to indicate Overlook.
"And a nice measured range down that way."
Men were out there setting some kind of survey stakes already. Guys up close started working double time, dragging stuff off the pack animals. Cletus grabbed a bamboo pole.
"Your basic bamboo. The kind Lady turned out until we brought our thoughts to the table."
Cleet popped off a few fireballs in the general direction of a couple of gossiping crows. The crows laughed. The fireballs wobbled into the distance, ran out of momentum, drifted to the ground, faded away.
Can't hit shit, except shadows. Unless you walk right up to what you want to burn.
Longo interjected. We made her believe that since soldiers would be using the bamboo to work other targets, whether she liked that or not, they ought to be able to hit whatever they're aiming at. Loftus said, she spent time around soldiers. She understands how they think.
I sneered. She's been screwing one for 5 years. She ought to have a clue.
Cleet grabbed a bamboo pole with black bands around it.
This is a cute little number.
He nodded to his brothers. They picked up similar poles. Each brother pointed his in the general direction of a crow. Cleet said,
do it.
They cranked. Fireballs flew. Black feathers exploded, floated around smoldering. More fireballs darted out. It didn't seem to matter whether the guys aimed well or not. The fireballs hunted their targets down however desperately they darted and dodged. Just the way they'd hunted down shadows. Cleet leaned on his pole.
That ought to take care of the spy problem.
His brothers remained alert. Longo picked off a clever little devil trying to sneak off at low altitude, whipping between boulders and turned so tight it lost wing feathers every time. A ball of violet fire closed in at 4 times the crow's best speed. Poof. Now there's a trick I can appreciate, I said. Likewise, Ty Day and Uncle Doge and the guys of the thin, desperate line at the Shadow Gate. Jaws dropped. Rudy swore,
Fucking A! I want me one of them mudsuckers.
I asked, you got a special problem with crows? Rudy asked,
It only kills crows?
Cletus averred,
I suppose we could set them to knock down most anything. But the more targets you want to specify, the more complicated your logistics is going to get.
That's not why you're here, I guessed.
That was just to clear the area.
Longo said,
We wanted something guys like us could appreciate.
Loftus added, Considering that we're not likely to bring in a lot of recruits anytime soon, while Taglios can come up with as many as they want. There was a growing faction up north these days who wanted Taglios to pretend that the company had gone its way. We were headed for Kadovar when we came to Taglios. There was nothing to keep us from going there now. If everybody held real still and stayed real quiet, we might lose interest and head on down the road. While I talked to the engineers, Otto and Hagop erected several trestle tables. These acquired decorative vices and tool collection play settings. Racks rose behind the tables. Their companions began stacking bamboo tubes in those. Big bastards, I said. Some were 15 feet long. Some were 4 inches in diameter. Cleet said,
Big and brutal.
Careful where you point that damn thing.
A soldier was trying to get a bead on a crow speeding south. He wasn't worried about people dumb enough to get between him and his target.
What we wanted most was increased accuracy and velocity. A little extra oomph at the other end would be a nice plus, too.
Hagop!
Hagop took a 12-footer with a 3-inch bore, striped red, locked it into a vise. He sighted down its length. He tapped gently with a hammer, shifting his aim slightly.
That boulder out there that looks like One-Eye's hat.
He armed a complicated bamboo spring mechanism. I didn't think the boulder looked much like a hat. It was a good 400 yards away. 3 soldiers with standard bamboo launched 12 fireballs before one got lucky and painted a lime glow along one edge.
Usual problem. When you finally do get a hit, you don't do much damage. Unless it's people. Go ahead, Hagop.
Hagop triggered his pole. There was a frying bacon sound. An intense orange ball crossed to the boulder too fast for me to follow. It hit dead center. A lance of fire blew out of the rock for 15 seconds. I felt the heat. The boulder shifted position slightly, pointing its tail of fire farther downhill. The fireball popped out the other side of the rock
like a pimple's core squirting.
Shit, said I, and double shit. That fucker must be 10 feet thick.
Cleet said, a 3-inch ball will run at least 15 feet into the kind of stone we have around here.
Hag up, see the silver character that looks like the rune for fate?
He pointed at Overlook. There were thousands of characters on the wall. I didn't understand which one he meant. Neither did Hagop.
Tallest line of characters. Middle of the target. Looks like a flagpole trailing 2 pennons to the right next to something like a 3-tined pitchfork.
All right.
I found it too.
Go ahead. Snipe away when you're ready.
I protested. That's over 3,000 yards. Closer to 4. He'll be lucky to hit the wall.
Ready. Do it.
Bacon fried. An orange ball left the bamboo pole. It took less than 3 seconds to reach Overlook. I wouldn't have been able to follow it had I not been standing behind Hagop. A flash lit up the whole countryside when the fireball hit the spells protecting the wall. It struck right where Hagop aimed it. The target rune appeared slightly discolored once the glare waned.
Oh my, said I.
Tyday and Uncle Doge yammered at one another. They had no need to understand our quacking to see the potential.
We figure a ball will run out at least 14 miles before it loses all its momentum, Cleet said. By then it won't have much more energy than a regular ball, and won't be much good for anything but killing shadows and general destruction anymore.
He patted the tube Hagop had used.
This was our prototype. It's sighted in. We gotta do all these others now, which is why we come up here.
Hagop and Otto replaced that pole with another not yet marked. Otto gave the back end a half twist. A complete tray-like section came off. 2 guys from Lady's factory packed the tray with something that looked like potter's clay, then seated a big black rubber marble in that. Hagop put the tray back into his toy, fiddled with the triggering mechanism, asked the engineer brothers,
You guys satisfied with the way this thing is laid?
All 3 squatted. They bickered. Hammers tapped. They argued. Then they, Otto, Hagop, and the factory people, all assumed particular positions and stared at Overlook. Bacon crackled. An orange fireball hit the air. 1,000 yards out, it began to drift to the left, then downward. It hit ground short of the wall. Fire gouted into the air for 15 seconds. So did bits of stone and sod. All 7 observers began combining observations on a chart, bickering steadily. They took the tray off the pole and peered through. More notes went onto the chart. That eventually passed into the hands of a specialist who used some of the arcane tools to machine the interior of the pole. The brothers moved to another pole. Their accomplices had a dozen set up for testing. They repeated the process over and over. Some poles put their fireballs on target first try. Some missed badly. The worst got discarded right away. No sense wasting time on those. There was still a need for less accurate shadow slappers. Once a pole went through its rework, it got tested for consistency. An alphabet of arcane marks and various paints went on to tell the soldiers what quirks the weapon retained. Otto seldom says much, but during his lunch break he observed,
Lady's really got the power back now.
Hardly anyone even suspected the truth. Those who did were not prepared to believe it. How many of them things you going to work? My guys had stopped getting any work done. They were hanging around watching the fireworks like a bunch of big kids. Cleet said,
We brought 50 in this batch. We hope we can come up with 20 reliables out of those. If everything goes right, we'll start work on some really big stuff. Boy, will the towns be surprised.
I could imagine what these new fireballs would do to men's bodies, but I suspected that scything through legions was not their purpose, and my suspicion was confirmed next afternoon. Lady herself came to inspect the 26 pieces the brothers had found acceptable. The woman seemed emotionally drained, yet did show a bounce that said part of her life was going well.
She and the old man were finding free moments to be something other than captain and lieutenant. I was pleased for them.
Excellent,
she said, after she watched every accepted tube smite Overlook's wall at least once.
What about the crow-specific light arms?
You see any crows?
Longo asked.
We got a picket line out. They don't even get close.
Good. Prime all of these things with full loads. I'm going to try my own experiment.
Hagop told me.
We're in the chips. We done come out with 6 more than we even hoped. And half the others are good enough we can use them up close, a mile or less. We'll kick us some ass big time.
The whole gang were as thrilled as kids with new toys. And Lady was the worst. She bounced around like she was 15 again. The troop shuffled the tables around, began packing tools and loading wagons. Loftus, Longinus, and Otto kept chuckling about something. I glanced around. I did not like the portents. Even Lady had the look. The look that always showed up on One Eye and or Goblin when they were going to pull a stunt the rest of us might regret.
Just hang on here, everybody, I yelled, trying to be the responsible one. I don't know what you're up to, but this was my fief.
A bunch of them, including Lady, the brothers, Otto, and Hagop, all got behind the tables. They started wisecracking as they sighted down the lengths of fully loaded heavyweight poles.
Don't even think about it, I growled.
My in-laws hovered behind me, silently, not understanding anything being said, but clear on the fact that yesterday and today added up to something significant. Something beyond the obvious.
Don't do it, I begged.
22 bamboo tubes discharged within seconds of one another. The villains all watched the orange fireballs streak north-northwest, straight into the area where that storm of crows had exploded in my imagination. It was not my imagination this time. Catcher's hideout had to be more than 10 miles away. It did not take the fireballs 10 seconds to get there. Maybe not 5. I was too shaken to be a good judge of time's passage. Fire and smoke and shit flew 0.5 mile high. Now the whole gang went bugfuck. Every one of them, Lady too, put fireballs into the air in streams of 4 and 5. The distant woods began to boil. Even from so far away, I could make out gigantic trees being hurled 1,000 feet into the air. I recalled some trees there being twice as thick as I was tall. They twisted through the sky like scythes of fire. A firestorm took life below. It hurled flames and smoke heavenward like an angry volcano. It was a day when a lot of crows died. I'm sure it was a day when Soulcatcher found not one reason to laugh. Chapter 88. There is a lot of ritual in human affairs. The old man started me doing sermons from the annals, the way he had himself in ancient times. He was a firm believer in every man knowing his exact place in our long history. And then, most of the older hands were stuck with teaching Taglian to anyone who did not speak it already. Croker wanted every brother to have a language in common with every other. Sometimes it seemed we had as many native tongues as we had men to speak them. I recalled no instance in the annals when the company had become as polyglot as it was now. Another burden I bore was keeping in shape by hoofing it across to headquarters for staff meetings every few days. A wonderful aroma wakened me. I shoved my head out of our oft-improved bunker. What are you cooking? I asked Ty Day.
Uncle Doge killed a wild pig last night. There will be roast pork today.
I hope I can keep it down.
It won't be ready for hours yet. You told me to remind you of your staff meeting this morning.
Shit. It was supposed to be important, too. I didn't dare be late. Better save me some. I dragged my ass out and made what morning preparations I could. None of us were the sort who spent hours trimming our beards or prettying our hair or taking baths. But you do have to splash a little water in your face sometimes, and you do have to get the crud out of your teeth just so you feel like keeping on. I wondered what would become of our teeth if we didn't get One Eye back.
Those tiny little spells he put on them, to protect them, had to be renewed every 2 years. And we had battalions of new men, still lacking their initial exposures. Ty Day didn't save me diddly. He took the pig off the fire and followed me. There's just no ditching the man. I was still not riding. Sleepy had not brought my mount back.
Sleepy had not come home yet himself, though he'd had ample time.
He'd disappeared while crossing the mountains. No search through the ghost world, nor on sight, had produced a trace. I feared the worst. Two sleek crows followed me, gliding from bush to rock to ruin. Otherwise, there was no evidence to indicate that Soulcatcher remained alive or was interested in us anymore, despite the vandalism of her home. She was biding her time. You could say that about the woman. She was crazy, but never impatient. Her temper did not control her. Lady said she'd escaped the barrage only because she had taken Howler's carpet north so she could conspire with the Radisha. I had orders not to look for Soulcatcher. I had orders to run whenever I sensed her presence. The same with Kina. Smoke was next to useless now. I had become too valuable a resource to risk. Right. I glanced back before we started up the far slope. Uncle Doge was trailing us, as he did so often. His step suggested he was ready for anything. One hand rested on Ashwand always. Ty Day and I had resumed training with him, want to or not. He wouldn't explain what was going on inside his head. He just kept whacking away, forcing us to defend ourselves or enjoy painful bruises. He despaired of my ever reaching what he considered minimal proficiency with a sword. He didn't understand the difference between a lone wolf warrior and a soldier who is part of a team of mutually supporting fighters. Or he pretended not to understand. He expected trouble, no doubt about that, but it was too much trouble to explain. I've been running with Croker long enough that I should be used to that. I reminded Ty Day, where mushrooms? Huh? Kept in the dark? Fed a diet of horseshit? You would think that he would remember, but he wasn't interested in trying. Like most Dweng Bao attached to the company. Never mind. Uncle Doge tried to invite himself into the meeting. A couple of hard-eyed guards stepped into his path. He chose to go hang around with the other Dweng Bao. He never did that before. He seemed to be looking for Jojo, One Eye's erstwhile bodyguard. Jojo was never a gregarious sort, even among other Dweng Bao. I ducked inside the old man's dugout. A whole herd of people had gathered in there. They were waiting for me, apparently.
Let's get started, Croker said. First, intelligence received. The rumor is true. Mugaba definitely did sign on with the Radisha. He started putting together a force somewhere south of Dejigori. The reports didn't explain where, but did say his men had begun evicting the locals from the best cropland so they can support themselves. The leadership in Taglios hasn't decided exactly what to do yet. There's actually a lot of sentiment for forgetting us altogether. The captain didn't reveal his sources. Some of that came from me and Lady, dreaming and walking the ghost when smoke wasn't completely useless. He added, it seems Mugaba will enjoy the support of several small auxiliary units raised by religious sects with a grudge against us or our friends. Blade chuckled. Chapter 89. Silence stretched. I found a battered mug left over from Kialune's glory days, helped myself to tea from a pot steeping beside Croker's crude hearth. The stuff was more bitter than medicine. That explained why it was still there. I pretended to enjoy it.
Cleet, Croker said. What's the agricultural situation?
Only in the Black Company would a siege engineer be in charge of farming. Cleet said,
nothing new to report. Exceptional crops threatening to mature earlier than the locals predicted. We could do worse than to establish ourselves here.
Cletus and his brothers centered a faction interested in settling down. They felt their new weapons could discourage our most determined enemies. They made no strong representations, though. The company had slogged through hell for an age.
Now we possessed a rich province and a fine fortress, and our only serious enemies were hundreds of miles away and probably disinclined to come after us anytime soon. I didn't listen to the editorializing following a suggestion that the gods loved us because our crops were doing so well. I paid no attention till Longina started telling us why we no longer needed to be afraid of anyone.
If the Radisha really traded away half her power so she could keep her position, that means the priests are really in charge. I don't see them, no matter how much they fear us or hate Blade, ever saddling themselves with another real army. The cost and the threat to their power, I'd heard it all before.
The priests would not let the Radisha come after us. I didn't believe it. He was whistling in the dark, but I was a ghost walker. I could go anywhere and see anything. I had to work harder to mislead myself.
You're wrong, Longo, I said. We'll have company here eventually. Probably way sooner than any of us would like.
I even had the old man's attention suddenly. I had a dream. Most everyone knew that I had visions. The mechanics and reliability remained my secret. To avoid troubling people who might worry about me, I blamed it all on the kinds of seizures I had been having since the siege. Lady clucked her tongue, an irksome habit she didn't know she had acquired. She and Croker were turning into everybody's grandparents. The inner circle needed young blood bad. She asked,
"Could you tell us about your dream, Mergen? Or do we have to wait for the book?"
She was annoyed with me, because I'd begun making new revisions to her volume of the annals. Some of our latest class of enlistees had been around back then. Not all of them recalled events the same as she did. The high point, like the boss said, is that our old pal Mogaba isn't unemployed anymore. A General Susurrus. Had they thought that the old man was joking? I don't get much from my dreams. I have no control over them. I get knocked back in time sometimes, but I can't go whenever I want to find out why something happened after we find out that it did happen. I have to wait for news from our friends on the scene just like everybody else. We do have friends up north who supply us with reliable intelligence. I check up on them whenever I can. We didn't use smoke much anymore. He wanted to wake up. He wasn't really in a coma now anyway. Lady had to struggle to make him useful. She took advantage of the resulting opportunities herself. I continued, but Soulcatcher must have been in touch with Mogaba at some point. She recommended him to the Radisha. Bet you the woman took him on mostly because she didn't want to get Catcher pissed off at her. Mogaba's already promising the priests that he'll catch Blade and Lady for them. There'd been huge bounties on those two from the moment the Radisha turned on the company. Mogaba never let failure dent his confidence. Blade volunteered.
I could go hit them back first. It would be fun to pick them off and watch the live ones squirm.
No. Croker was in no mood for flights of fancy. I know who'd pick off who if you went dancing with Mogaba. Sindawe, talk to me about this.
I'm hearing this for the first time.
I need to think about it, Captain.
Think out loud. Mogaba is alone.
By which Sindawe meant that Mogaba had no Nar adherents anymore. Those who'd gone with him when he left the company were dead.
His sanity will be more strained than ever.
He may become obsessed with destroying you, personally, because you took away his birthright.
Croker grunted, unsurprised.
Mergen,
how long before he can get into our hair?
It took 4 years for us to get where we can make it here, still in good enough shape to starve. And we wouldn't be as happy as we are now if the Radisha had fooled us and stayed faithful. We didn't lose as many men fighting as I expected, and a lot fewer to disease.
He let slide the fact that we had come during the off-season, when, normally, moving an army is next to impossible.
Speaking of numbers, Bucket said, the last bunch who wanted to go home are long gone.
Lady stated the obvious.
Mogaba won't have to train the way we did.
He can round up men we've already trained for him.
The old man asked me, what does the Radisha want from Mogaba?
The priests think he should just maintain control of the territories we overran. Some of them are real excited about their chances to make a killing down there.
But the woman just wants to keep us south of the mountains. I chuckled. His job will be the same as it was when he worked for Long Shadow. Only he'll plug the bottle from the other end.
Mogaba will come someday,
Isi observed.
Asindawe said.
Croker grunted again.
Bucket said, if he don't bring half a shitload of timber, kites, and tons of bamboo and comes in the summer...
Longo cracked.
He could have peasants carry supplies up, then eat the peasants.
Sindawe, Ochiba, and Isi glared.
Croker said, stick to business. There are changes happening in Taglios. Thanks to Mergen's spells, we know about some of them.
Everybody waited for him to say something more. He didn't. Finally, Lady remarked,
Soul Catcher is still a problem.
Definitely. She had not responded to Lady's barrage. Yet. I was not supposed to look for her, but I did know she was still around. She was shielding herself with illusions and moving a lot. I had every confidence that she'd lost no interest in causing us misery. No one ever mentioned the child. I knew she'd survived and had been rescued, not by the Kina to whom she wept her appeals, but by Catcher, to the accompaniment of merry taunts. Lady and Croker had hardened their hearts, which was understandable. They'd had scarcely more contact with her than some unknown child born the same day at the far end of the world. I wouldn't say anything. I was supposed to avoid Catcher until I received specific orders otherwise. The old man's tolerance for my improvisations had been exhausted. Sleepy's loss remained unforgiven.
Croker asked,
What about your mother-in-law, Mergen? What about Goblin and One-Eye?
What could I say? They're still missing. That couldn't be blamed on me. Not yet. He might find a way. Our last contact with any of them had come when some of Goblin's rangers had arrived with the Prabhendra Dra in manacles, Lisa Bowalk snarling in a cage on a cart, and no word at all about what Goblin was doing or why he was doing it. I didn't think his desertion was part of the old man's master plan. I refused to believe that Croker could plan that far ahead. The pasty-faced little wizard was out there somewhere, playing out his own scheme. I didn't get many chances to look for him anymore. The dreams didn't come as often now. If they did, I visited Sari first. Sari and my son, that absolutely beautiful, drooling lump she nicknamed Tobo, because she didn't want to pick a real name without me there to talk it over and find out face-to-face what his name would be and why. She was determined to join me, though by now, even the most remote parts of the swamp had heard about the falling out between the Radisha and the Black Company. That would put Sara at greater risk if she left the temple. Almost all the Nguyen Bao who had left their swamps in recent times had been associated with the company somehow. Sari's keepers were alert. They expected her to try something, now she was no longer the size of a small house. Clever woman. She was using guerrilla tactics while she regained her strength. Every day, in every way, she made the priestly population more miserable. That was easy. She just imitated her mother. When the time came, they would, probably, lack enthusiasm for the task of her recapture. Croker stared at Lady. He was waiting for her to say something else about her sister. The others did the same. Catcher weighed in all our minds. Her luck never stopped running strong. Her grudge list kept getting longer. Though there was no way we could hurt our cause anymore. She couldn't do worse than kill us, could she? Hell, we all take on a death sentence when we join the company. Lady said,
Several soldiers have gone missing the last couple of nights. Some probably deserted. But not all of them.
She waved. Isi and Ochiba, already queued, brought a bundle to the front of the crowd. They dropped it on the dirt floor. I did not remind the old man that we could enjoy real floors and real furniture if he would just move into Overlook.
Lady said, This may be a little ripe.
Uh-oh. Isi and Ochiba spun the dead man out of his wrappings. He didn't stink as bad as I expected. He was shriveled like an old mummy. His mouth was open in a scream that would never end. He seemed to have suffered a lot of bruises before he died.
Those would have been self-inflicted during his final struggle.
Shadow got him, I said,
needlessly. Croker eyed me. I shrugged. No shadows have gotten through since I've been on guard.
I was sure.
There would have been an uproar.
They're under control then, he said.
It's her,
using Long Shadow's leftovers. Catcher was the new Shadow Master. Maybe she was honing her skills. Lady observed, there's nothing we can do about this kind of attack except never go anywhere alone and never without Bamboo. What's the matter with him? The him she referred to was the company analyst, who'd started making weird noises. He jerked around, apparently trying to swallow his own tongue, so they told me later. At the time, I was out of touch with my body entirely. I was a fly who never saw the swatter coming. I went to the place of all the bones for a moment, and for that whole eternity, seemed to be smeared all over the grim landscape. A white crow mocked me. Then I was the white crow. Then I was out of there, but I didn't follow my habitual course. I didn't get to see all those grumpy old men glowering from their cocoons of ice. I got to wing my way away through curtains of darkness back to those gaunt and wonderful days when first I met Sari, then before that, where I met my own ghost and joined it in a tour of the besieged city. None of the words from my invisible beak were my own, but the mad woman who manufactured them didn't seem to be paying attention to or really directing what was happening. Poor me. I was like a moth caught in an unexpected squall. The hammer of my desperate wings did nothing to daunt a gale indifferent to my existence. I saw a lot of death and despair. I learned nothing new and saw nothing I hadn't had a more intimate relationship with in the past. Catcher maybe just poked at me in passing, because she was bored, or maybe she was unaware that she'd bumped me at all. It didn't matter. I couldn't retaliate. All I could do was flap like a son of a bitch and hope I could survive one more storm. Darkness came.
Chapter 90. I awakened in the alcove where smoke used to be stored. It was dark. I had no idea how long I'd been out. The meeting was over, that was certain. I didn't hear a sound. I started to clamber out of there, found I was incredibly weak. My legs betrayed me when I tried to stand. I pitched forward through the curtain masking the alcove. There was a sudden mouse-like scurry. I lifted my head. The little bit of light betrayed the rodent. Ty Day was stuffing papers back into piles while trying to appear innocent. Maybe he was. He couldn't read.
There you are. I got worried.
He helped me up.
What happened?
My knees were watery. I had one of those attacks, like I used to have when we were in Dejigori and Taglios.
Why did they... They all trooped out of here hours ago. Even the guards went away.
What time is it? The meeting had begun early in the morning.
Be sunset in an hour.
Shit. A whole day shot then. Tide helped me stay standing. I didn't shake him off. I looked for food. Food always helped after a long ghost walk with smoke. This was not the same. At least cold, tough, burnt mutton didn't help, and there was nothing else available. What I wanted was something alcoholic. A few amateurs had arisen to take One Eye's place. Best known were Willow Swan and Cordy Mather, who'd stayed around despite being free to go back north. Cordy no longer had that fire in his belly where the Radisha was concerned, but their product was no good. And if I wanted some, I had to acquire it through intermediaries, since we all had to pretend to observe the rules. But I had a suspicion of late about where One Eye could have hidden his manufacturing equipment. There was a small reinforced cubby in my old dugout where I'd kept the annals and the odd private item. It had survived disasters unscathed. Mother Goda had helped build it. We climbed up out of Croker's dugout, me still wobble-kneed and griping.
I wish the hell he'd move into the fucking fortress.
The experimentation was all over, but our crowd was still scattered through the hills roughing it. An hour of light remained.
Where is everybody?
I didn't see a soul closer than the ruins of Kialune.
That gave me a little shock of fright. Had I returned to the world I left when the seizure took me? Was I caught in another lair of dream?
They all went away, even the guards.
Tide repeated the news as though he was talking to someone both deaf and dense.
Else I could not have entered the Liberator's shelter.
It had been a while since anybody called the old man that.
I take it Uncle Doge went to keep an eye on them?
Tide didn't reply. I headed for my former home. Compared to the bunker we moved to over there, this dump was a palace. Lady and the old man had turned my palace into a prison. The downhill side entrance that we put in for Mother Goda and Uncle Doge now opened into an exercise area, fenced with captured spears. Lisa Bowalk lay in a cage there, muzzle on paws, exposed to the elements, dully resigned. The Prabhrindra draw paced, avoiding glittering spear points and the reach of the shapeshifter's claws. He seemed patient, counting his condition only a temporary setback. Neither Long Shadow, Howler, nor Narayan Singh were outside. Singh's absence wasn't surprising. He was punished if he ventured into the light. But the former Shadow Master was not, and he hated the darkness inside. He feared what might be lurking there. The poor old boy had lost all his self-confidence. He spent most of his time shivering, rocking, and whimpering to himself. He was losing weight, which was hard to believe. The stench was awful. Those people had no friends now. They lived worse than animals in the cruelest zoo or feedlot. Passers-by were encouraged to torment Long Shadow and the living saint of the deceivers. Howler hadn't earned his final standing on Lady Shitlist. He was treated with indifference, yet fed the best table scraps. Smoke would be inside somewhere, too. He and the prince were treated best. Bowalk was fed and otherwise ignored, as long as she behaved. A sign that could be read by only a few actually insisted that the Prabhrindra Dra was an honored guest. Somebody's little joke. A good storm would help with the smell, I said. I glanced at the sky. Relief seemed unlikely any time soon. Tide grunted. He raised a hand. Something was up. He was on his toes, nostrils flaring. His head moved in little jerks as he tried to hear something. I froze. This was his business, his expertise. I heard it too now. Scratching from within the dugout. Months had gone by, and still I had no clear idea why Long Shadow and Singh remained among the living. They kept farting around. Croaker and Lady would regret not having disposed of them quickly. Lady thought they might be useful. Someday. Somehow, somewhere. Better find out what it is, I said, with no enthusiasm whatsoever. This kind of thing always meant trouble. What happened to Uncle Doge? He might be handy to have around if something happened. I wasn't carrying anything but a little three-ball bamboo stick. Tai Day stepped over to the headquarters company woodpile, now serviced by Shadowlander peasant contractors, and selected a yard of kindling with a burly knot at one end. He gestured me forward. I slipped down and yanked on the door of my former home. Narayan Singh, the living saint of the deceivers, tumbled into the twilight. He'd been kept inside for a long time. He was naturally dark-skinned, but had acquired a pasty, maggoty coloration. Maybe Lady was doing more than just keeping him locked up in his own filth. She could be subtle when she wanted. She just didn't want that often. Tide bopped him on the noggin. Poor old Narayan. His life had not gone well for a long time, and the son of a bitch had earned every second of pain. Bet his goddess snickered whenever she thought about him. Half of his torment would be the waiting, knowing that someday Lady would take time to offer him some specialized, personalized, unloving attention. Let's be real careful, I told Tide. Tide grunted. He wore the ultimate Wang Bao stone face. Totan had not been forgotten. Don't even think about it, Tide. Lady would roast you. Besides, there's more of them inside. And they're all worse than Singh. I meant worse trouble, but it didn't turn out that way.
Both Long Shadow and Howler wore hobbles and metal gags. Long Shadow hadn't eaten well since his capture. A starved sorcerer is a tame sorcerer, I guess. Covered with filth, Howler and the Shadow Master barely had the strength to crawl into the light after, they thought, Narayan had opened the way. Even famine had not yet tamed them completely. A point worth keeping in mind. Taide remarked,
"They were supposed to seal off the kennel side.
Don't look like anybody bothered. Keep an eye on them, without breaking anything, or anybody. I'll be right back out." Taide grunted again, in deep disappointment. "We'll get our turn," I promised. Smoke was still inside. He'd looked so bad for so long, he didn't look much worse now. His clothing had decayed into rotten rags. He was chained. One chain trailed back into the darkness. The others had been chained, too. The guys had shown that much sense before they took off wherever they went. Somehow, the villains managed to get loose. I wondered if they would have dragged Smoke any farther had they had the strength and time to manage a successful getaway. Might have been amusing to watch them return to a world that had changed completely during their holidays. I stepped over the little wizard, found a small lamp and got it burning. Except for the stink and mess, everything was pretty much as we'd left it. A ragged shawl belonging to Kigota still lay tangled on a three-legged chair, liberated from Kialune ages ago. There was no evidence that the prisoners had spent any time in this part of the dugout. Following Smoke's chain, I discovered that the one side had been walled off, but the carpenters had done a poor job using salvage lumber that hadn't stood up to someone's patient ministrations. I ducked through the hole. The stench was a lot thicker on the other side. I had seen less filthy pigsties. The prisoners hadn't explored their prison thoroughly. They hadn't found my little cubby, but someone else had, and had decided to take advantage of it. One Eye's lost manufacturing equipment and finished product had been stuffed into the hole, along with what looked like a bunch of treasures harvested from the ruined city. Mother Goda had enjoyed collecting junk during her nocturnal ramblings. I dragged out a jug, popped its cork. Damn, that stuff smelled nasty. Some kind of distilled spirits. I took a long pull that left my eyes running. The stuff tasted worse than it smelled. After a second throat-burning draft, I raised my lamp high, trying to get some light in there past the clutter. I'd left a few treasures of my own, though nothing important enough to have dragged on over to the Shadowgate yet. I didn't recall what all I'd stashed. Ah, what's this? I snaked an arm in through the junk. As I closed my fingers on ragged burlap, I managed to elbow a stack of earthenware bottles piled on their sides. One Eye evidently had meant to revisit them long ago, because even an ignoramus like me knows you don't leave bottled beer horizontal forever. It took only that nudge to get the bottles banging against one another, then blasting their contents all over me and the inside of the dugout. I snagged one spewing bottle and got some of its contents inside me. Not bad, but a little yeasty. "I'm all right," I shouted in response to Taide's inquiry from outside. "I found One Eye's treasure!" In more ways than one, I discovered. The object, wrapped in burlap, was that wonderful wizard-killer spear he'd whittled while we were trapped in Dejigore. The gold and silver inlays alone were worth a fortune.